Good evening and welcome to a special episode of Anan Podcast, shot here live at El Bujairi during the Miss Global Forum 2023. I'm very delighted to introduce my guest today, Chris Gardner, who is an inspirational story and a successful man that I am absolutely thrilled to get to know.
Well, I am honored to be here with you in the beautiful kingdom of Saudi Arabia, so thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us. So, Chris, I'd like to start us off, as we begin our journey in getting to know you, the human behind the multiple successes, by you telling us perhaps the first memory that you have on your time here on Earth.
Oh, man. That's a big question. I can share this with you. The most incredible memory ever in my life will be as a 3-4-year-old boy. And unfortunately, at this point in time, my mom was away from me.
Okay.
I did not know why. No one explained to me why. And we were living in a foster home for children who did not have parents. And one day, this beautiful woman was in the kitchen and she was making this candy out of syrup from pancakes in this skillet, just by heating it up.
Bubbling
and
away.
I'll never forget, my mother and I had this incredible ability to ask and answer questions without words. Mm-hmm. We could look into each other's eyes and know what was being asked and what was being said. And she handed me this piece of candy and her eyes asked, "Do you know who I am?" And in my little 3-year-old mind, I said, "Yes, I know who you are. You're my mother." And that question you just asked me, no one's ever asked me that before. Okay, but what a remarkable question. And I hope I answered it, but that was the most memorable moment of my life on this planet as a young person.
I'm so glad that I asked you that question, and I'm pausing for a moment because I'm getting a little bit emotional emotional about that response. I mean, did you then find out why you were in a foster home?
We ultimately did, but unfortunately, I don't know about here in Saudi Arabia, but in America, too many times, there's something called the cycle of silence. Mm-hmm. We all have some cycles in our family's history. And in my family's history of cycles, there's alcoholism, there's illiteracy, generational poverty, there's homelessness. But there's another cycle that no one ever talks about, which is the cycle of silence. Meaning, something happened in all of our families that no one talks about.
It's the lack of acknowledgement of a moment in time, as if it's like a black hole.
And nobody talks about it.
And no one talks about
it. Somebody knows, people know, and we hear snippets of it, and we're allowed to try and piece it together ourselves. But that cycle of silence is what leads directly into cycles being repeated.
Right.
Because if we don't learn, we'll do it again.
You don't learn, you don't address, you don't confront, you don't heal.
You don't deal, you don't heal. And it only gets worse. So that cycle of silence, I would say, is just as dangerous as any other cycles you can imagine.
That's extremely powerful, to be honest. And so how have you navigated through that? And how have you used that to propel yourself forward?
I chose to break all of the cycles in my family's history. I chose to, number one, break the cycle of men who are not there for their children.
Right.
That led me to break all of the other associated cycles, generational poverty, illiteracy, homelessness, no education. I broke all of those cycles by choice when I made that one decision. And that decision was, my children were gonna know who their father is. Mm. That's the most important decision that I've ever made in my life. And I say that as a 69-year-old man. That is the most important decision that I've ever made in my life.
At what age was that?
I made that decision at 5 years old.
5 years old.
5 years old. And I will submit to you that the folks who saw the film, The Pursuit of Happiness, in the movie, Jaden Smith plays my son as a five-year-old. In reality, at this point in our journey, my son was 14 months old.
Wow.
He was still in diapers.
Wow.
So if you ever see the film again, that's going to change everything that
change
you think
the perspective.
About. Yes, ma'am.
So that was when your son was 18 months old, but you had made this decision at five years old.
Yes.
Tell us about that moment in which you made that commitment to yourself.
It was simple. When you grew up without a father and have another man say to you, I am not your father, with a few other words thrown in,
right,
and show you and demonstrate to you, it's very easy to make that decision. I had a gun pulled on me as a five-year-old boy. Just like that. That's when I made that decision. And people will say, well, how can a little boy make a decision like that? Trust me, when you've had a gun pulled on you,
you're no longer a little boy.
You're no longer a little boy. And you will make a decision that this will never happen again. Not to my child or any child that I could do anything about. No, I'm breaking the cycle.
Do you think the lack of a proper father figure made you a better man?
Oh, absolutely. But you know what else made me a better man? My mom. My mom was the greatest man I ever knew in my life.
Oh, wow. I would love to hug mom.
Oh, man. Let me tell you something. My mom moved to heaven. She's with God. She moved to heaven 30 years ago, but we're still having the same conversation every day.
May she rest in peace.
When you come to visit my home, you're going to notice my house was built backwards, some kind of a way. You got to walk through the kitchen to get into the house.
I love it.
All right?
Because the kitchen is life.
All right? That's the center of the
yes,
whole house, right?
Yes.
And when you come in, you're going to see this picture of my mom sitting there next to the coffee machine. And we have a conversation every day and a cup of coffee every day. And I can still hear her asking me the same questions. Son, did you do your work? Yes, ma'am. Did you pray on it? Yes, ma'am. Well, keep working because God's busy. God, Allah, he's got to go help somebody else.
Yes.
You just keep working. He's going to get to you, okay? And but my mom was the greatest man I ever knew. And I've known a few great men, but my mom was it.
Those words that she shared are extremely wise, I think. And in our culture, you know, you say you plan for things, you work on them and you work hard, but there will come a point where fate, there's a destiny or a fate interplay.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you have said you don't believe in luck.
Mm-hmm.
What is your perspective on fate and destiny?
Oh, man. First of all, let me say this. I believe, truly, we can create our fates. And we've got to be prepared to embrace the decisions that we made and the things that we did. We also got to be able to embrace and accept the things that we did not do.
Right.
Right? I've got this thing about preparation. And directly related to fate. I've got this thing, I am mad, borderline mad about preparation. It's everything. I'm in a business. I've spent my entire career on Wall Street. I've had to compete with people that went to Harvard for kindergarten. Right? But I was prepared. I was prepared by two factors. Number one, I had a mother who told me every day, you can do or be anything. And I believed it. But I also, my whole life, I've had some teachers that believed in me and invested in me. And maybe they saw something in me that reminded them of themselves. And not just teachers in schools, but mentors.
In life.
In life.
Yeah.
And that is why, honestly, the most important thing I do in my life every day is spend time with young people globally. And that's why I'm tremendously excited to be here with you right now at MISC in Saudi Arabia. I mean, this is a big to-do.
Yes.
You guys could have had anyone on the planet, but you've invited me. And if I got it right, I've been here now 3 times. So I must be doing something right, okay?
Your mother sounds like she was an incredibly wise woman based on what you've shared, and she's played such a prominent role in your life. What was her magic? Where did she derive her strength from and her wisdom from?
Let me tell you something. The first and most powerful thing she ever did for me or my family, before I was even born, she gave herself permission to dream. Prior to my mother, everyone in the history of my family in America had picked cotton.
Right.
As slaves.
Right.
We later picked cotton as sharecroppers. Mm-hmm. For those who are unfamiliar with that term, what that means is you're still picking cotton, but we're going to give you a share.
Yeah.
My mother made the decision that she would be the last person in the history of our family to ever pick cotton. She gave herself permission to dream. As a matter of fact, when she walked out of the cotton fields of Louisiana for the last time, she was pregnant with me, and she said, "My child will never pick cotton." That was permission to dream. And I will submit to you, that's bold.
Absolutely.
That is bold. That is bodacious, right? And yeah. For a woman, an African-American woman, 1940s, 1950s, to say, no, this part of my family's history and saga is over and it changes with me. That allowed me to take that to this level, to being here, to sitting with you right now, to go from being a sharecropper to a shareholder.
Wow. Have you used that term before?
Oh, no, but I will.
You know, coined and created in the kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Hey, going from sharecropping to shareholding. I like that because that's about dreams.
Right.
Right? And I have to tell you, not to get off the point, but to be here right now in the kingdom, I am unofficially the brand ambassador for the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Let me tell you why I say that.
I would clap, okay? Honestly.
No. Let me tell you why I say that. Because I have spoken in over 90 countries since the release of the film, all over the world. And people ask me, what's the most exciting place that you've ever been to? And I tell them, the beautiful kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And especially in America, you can see a look on their faces like...
You mean the desert? Huh? In the tents?
Right?
Is that what they...
But I flip the script on them, and what I do is I ask them a question.
Right.
The last time that you were in the kingdom, do you remember one thing? And the first thing they have to admit is...
They've never been to the
kingdom. I've never been to the kingdom. Oh. So all these strong opinions, thoughts, and ideas, and feelings that you have, you've never even been there. Mm-hmm. You only know what you know from... television. Oh. See, and you flip the script right there. And they got to admit, well, I've never been there. And you go on to explain that. Wait, let me share just a couple of things with you. First of all, if I got this right, close to 70% of the population in Saudi Arabia is under 30 years of age.
Around 65%.
Whoa.
Yes.
Man.
It is a youth-driven nation.
Oh, baby. And that is exciting for me.
Yes.
And if I were a young Saudi Arabian man or woman right now, I would be tremendously excited about the future and the vision 2030 as presented by your crown prince.
Right.
But I would also be a little anxious. I would be a little anxious because I know the best and the brightest in the world are coming to Saudi Arabia. The question is, what are you doing to make sure that you're ready to compete?
That is an incredibly powerful question.
Okay, that's a big question.
That Saudi youth, and I think, which is our primary audience, need to be asking themselves.
You got to ask yourself, because if you don't ask yourself, keep in mind, when I say the best and brightest minds are coming,
right,
that doesn't mean the best and brightest people. They are not coming here to be part of some nation building or make the world a better place.
They're
for coming
themselves.
For opportunities.
Yes.
Okay? And the question has got to be, am I prepared to compete with the best? Am I doing what I need to do right now to make sure I don't just have a seat at the table, I can sit at the table because I'm good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Not because my family, not because of my history, not because of my lineage or my historical relationships with the ruling family.
Right.
I'm sitting at this table because I'm good enough to compete.
Because I deserve to be at this table.
Because I be here. As a matter of fact, I'm not going to sit at the table. The people I really want to be in touch with in your audience are the people that are someplace saying right now, I want to build my own table.
I love that.
Right? These, let's build our own table.
You know, I think I think that is such an important question. Are you ready to build your own table?
Mm.
And what do you need to do to be competitively competitive enough for the global audience that's coming?
That's coming.
Your
and
way.
You better be getting ready now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because before you know it, somebody else is going to be telling you what to do.
Right.
Because you didn't get ready today.
And the future is now.
Is right now. And let me say this, this whole idea of the big now, the reason I really embraced that when you all gave me the invitation, 2020 taught us all one thing,
right,
beginning in 2020. None of us knows how much time we've got left on the clock. Your age right now chronologically means nothing, right? You can ask anybody out there right now, how much longer do you have to work before you can retire? They know. How much gas is in your car? They know. What's the balance on your mortgage? They know.
When,
but when
is
you
your
ask,
last breath?
How much time have you got left in your life? Nobody knows.
Right.
So it's all about the big now, because now is all we got. You can make money, you can lose money, but you cannot make time. This is it right here.
That's the only commodity you can't trade.
You can't.
Yeah.
They're not making any more time.
They're not making any more time.
No.
So I wanted to ask you, Chris, your initial rise to fame, and I know you talk about this quite extensively, and there's, you know, the movie and all, came from a very inspirational rags to riches story. Since then, you've gone on to become successful in many other ways. How have you worked towards positioning yourself beyond the story?
By being about something besides money. Okay, the most important thing, again, that I do every day is spend time with young people globally. I've spoken in over 500 schools the last 5 years on three different continents. And I'm having the same conversation with young people globally. Let's talk about what can be. There's no shortage of people telling young folks what you cannot do. Let's talk about what can be. Okay? I always like to point out to young people, it's so interesting how Oprah Winfrey and I are the same age, same zodiac sign, and went to the same elementary school.
Must have been the school.
Okay?
The stars.
No. The point is, they're the next Chris Gardner, the next Oprah Winfrey, the next you, is coming and going out of school doors all around the world right now. And people have asked me, well, what are the odds of you or Oprah ever happening again? I cannot answer that, because when you give yourself permission to dream, you don't focus on the odds, you focus on the evens. As in, even though, even if, even when, even where, even you, even me. Because this has been done before. But now it's our turn. Meaning, there's some folks who came before us, who came up a steeper side of this mountain, carrying a bigger and heavier load, but they kept going forward, onward, and upward. This has been done before, but now it's our turn. And again, if I were a young man or a young woman in Saudi Arabia right now, I would be tremendously excited about the future.
Who has been with you throughout your journey up that mountain? Mm. And who do you surround yourself with today?
First of all, you here in Saudi Arabia, in the beautiful religion of Islam, you say Allah has been with us.
Yes.
I, being born Christian, I'll say God has been with me. And I have some of my brothers and sisters in Saudi Arabia that will say to me, God and Allah are actually the same person. Right? But you want to be respectful.
Right.
Right?
Right.
The spirit of the people who came before me. This is my time to fulfill what Nelson Mandela once called my generational responsibility. He explained to me that perhaps your life has been what it has in order to prepare you to fulfill your generational responsibility, which is to make sure the people that are coming up behind you are prepared. Wow. Not that they get an opportunity, but they are prepared. That's the difference. And the most important thing that I want to do with the rest of my life, I want to create the next Chris Gardners. Okay? And I don't mean that in a egotistical or narcissistic way.
Like I want to make multiple me's so
let me explain you what I mean by that. Here's what I mean by that. If a young man comes up to me and says, I want to become a billionaire, I've got to say, I've never done that. I can't help you with that. If a young woman comes up to me and says, I want to become the CEO of a major Fortune 500 company, I've got to say, I've never done that. I can't help you with that. But when a young person comes up to me and says, I want to do something that I love, I'm committed to becoming world-class at it, and I want to work for myself, to that young person I can say, yeah, I've done that. I can help you with that, okay?
That is a dream all I can
right?
go after.
All right? And when I say I want to help create the next Chris Gardner, some of them are going to be women. I see it globally.
Oh, yes.
I know it.
Yes.
Yeah, they're coming.
They're coming. We're here.
Well, one of them is 15 years old. That's my granddaughter.
Yeah,
she's coming.
Tell me about her.
Oh,
man. Tell me about
her. We don't have enough time.
Just give me a glimpse.
Oh, my
God. Give me a glimpse.
Oh, my God. Okay, I'll tell you this one story, okay? this little girl, she was in the third, fourth grade. And she gives me this phone call. Now, when my granddaughter calls, they live in this place called Boston.
Right.
All right?
We know of it on America.
They call it Boston.
Boston,
okay,
right.
Okay, yeah. The point is, when my granddaughter calls, the world stops. I'm about to get on a plane. I'm going to Indonesia, Malaysia. I'm going to be on this plane 24 hours. I make them hold the plane.
Are you serious?
Right, I'm serious. No.
It's serious business.
Hold them, all right.
Right.
And she wants to tell me about this exciting thing that they'd done at school that day. They had a substitute teacher, which means she and her classmates took over the classroom.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And they make the office, they make a mock-up of the Oval Office at the White House.
Okay.
And they make this desk, and they sit behind the desk taking pictures, saying, I'm the President of the United States. Okay. That's what you're doing
that
in the fourth grade.
That is permission to dream.
That's permission to dream. So she calls me up. She says, Papa, look, you know the president, right? So, well, yeah. Well, I want you to call him up.
And tell him I'm coming.
Tell him I'm coming to the White House, and I want to take a picture sitting at the big desk.
Oh,
no, whoa. Let me make sure I got this right. You want me to call the president of the United States and tell him.
You're on your way.
That my 7-year-old granddaughter wants to come take a picture sitting at your desk. And she says, tell him I'm 7 and a half.
And she is
right?
now 15.
15,
oh,
okay.
God.
And keep in mind, let's keep history straight now. At this point in time, 7 and a half, 8 years old, the only president that they had ever heard of was Barack Obama.
Right.
They didn't know.
Yeah.
Historical fact. So the beautiful thing about getting to your 60s is you're old enough to know better, but you're young enough to say, well, why not? So I make the call. Now I get a call back.
You're serious?
I'll show you the pictures.
I would love to see the pictures.
I will show you the pictures of this
what
little girl.
What is your granddaughter's name?
Her name is Brooke.
Brooke.
Also known as the Honey Bear.
So Honey Bear sitting in the Oval Office. Mm.
That's called permission to dream. Okay?
And that is called collective permission to dream as well.
And this podcast, ladies and gentlemen, is officially over.
Can I ask you one more thing before we close? Yes. I've heard you talk about spiritual genetics.
You know what? That is something that is so, so, so personal to me, because the truth of the matter is that makes us all the same, right? Spiritual genetics, what is that? That is the fact that there's something in all of us, our spirits, that has nothing to do with anatomy, biology, chemistry, or physics. Something in all of us that cannot be analyzed, quantified, nor measured. Something in us that is beyond the scope, reach, or understanding of science, medicine, or technology. What is that? That is our spirits. And perhaps right now, our spirits all could be lifted to our higher selves. And then perhaps we'd have less war.
Absolutely. Less war, more peace, more understanding, and more human connection, which I think ultimately comes from the spirit form.
And those things can happen because dreams don't have borders. And that's why I'm honored to be here with you. So thank you so much for this.
Thank you so much for being here with me. It was an absolute pleasure having you and having this conversation.
Oh, man. Hey, look, I am serious. I am going to be back. As a matter of fact, you know what? I think I'm going to be back in Saudi Arabia in a week.
There you go. Well, we'll make sure that
Man. Yeah, you call my guy. Hey, look, man, look, we need to talk.
Okay, we need to talk.
Okay?
For sure. Thank you so much, Chris. Absolute pleasure having
Thank you.
Thank you for those words of wisdom and that inspiration. And it just goes to show that inspiration is transferred generationally, and you have the power to decide whether or not you want to yield the power of that generational inspiration and let go of those cycles or stay within them.
You know, the next time I'm going to interview you, because you know more about this stuff than I ever will.
That is not true, but but it would be an honor. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you, ma'am. All right, bye-bye.